Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation recorded live during the May 2007 Home Education Conference held at Southern Virginia University.
Let me welcome you again to the 2007 annual LDS EHE Home Education Conference here in Southern Virginia University. I'm Dan Ralphs, and my topic today is the seven keys and four phases of leadership education. Two myths in modern education, two myths that are prevalent, so prevalent, in fact, that they affect every level of education in the United States, and almost everyone's bought into them, from the corporate level trainings through the universities all the way down to the very beginning of kindergarten. Myth number one, ready? One person can educate another person. Myth. One person can educate another person. I think we understand this, but we still believe it. In other words, the idea, this is going to sound silly, the idea that I can stand up here and actually teach you something is absolutely false. Which makes me standing here a very interesting concept. But it's a false concept. In fact, I mean, there are a lot of evidences of this. Go into a class. You and your husband, or you and your wife, have sat in classes together. One person learned a ton. The other person didn't learn anything. Same teacher, same environment. Everything was the same. In other words, all education, another way of saying it, all education is self-education. Everything we've ever learned is because we've chosen to learn it. And everything that we really know is something that we've learned ourselves. Something that we've come to and understood ourselves. Now, the trouble with this concept, this idea, is that we look across the United States and we try to solve education, and what happens? Parents point at who? Teachers. Teachers point at who? Administrators. Administrators point at who? Legislators. Legislators point at who? Back to the administrators, or the president, or whoever. They point somewhere. Everyone's pointing at everyone else, and the teenager is at the mall, right? You see, there's this weird idea, and see if you can follow it, but it's the idea that when students study, that they learn. That was profound. Did everyone take that down? When students study, they learn, and when students study a lot, they learn a lot. It's amazing, you know? And that when someone wants to get educated, the very best way you can have that happen is to have somebody want to learn something. I mean, consider since you've been out of a public school college level, how many of you have learned something that you didn't want to learn? Or in other words, that someone came up to you and said, hey, I want to teach you something, and that you actually learned it. After we leave that consistent setting, then we actually fall into what I would title, you know, true education, where we actually, man, I need to learn more about business, and I'm picking up business books, and I'm studying them, and all of a sudden I'm learning things. And maybe that's why, one of the reasons why, so many say, once I got out of college, then I really learned how to do whatever I was trained to do. Because all education is self-education. The second myth is a corollary myth, and that is that it's the teacher's job to teach. It's not. The teacher's job is not to teach. The teacher's job is to inspire. What are they going to inspire them to do? To study and to learn. Yes. Yep. And what's, you know, and it's good and bad, because the sad part is that one school has a sociology teacher that is totally inspiring. And, you know, funny thing, like an abnormal number of students want to become sociology teachers and study sociology. A history teacher, just fantastic. Oddly enough, the whole city wants to become history majors, you know? And it's because they were inspiring, because they were able to inspire people to learn, and that inspiration takes place. Now, the reason I bring that up is because it's going to make a lot more sense. As we go through the four phases of education, and we go through the seven keys, you're going to begin to understand, based on, like, hopefully erasing those myths just a little bit, this is going to make a lot more sense. If the truth is, and I'll let you decide and be the judge of whether or not it's true, that all education is self-education, and it's the teacher's job not to teach anything but to inspire people to learn, then what I'm about to teach is going to make a lot of sense, if that's true. If that's not true, then, you know, we can still be friends. All right, so let's take a student from birth, in the leadership model, from birth to death, actually we'll stop somewhere around 18, somewhere around there. And let's talk about what it looks like to develop and to grow a leader. That's much of your business. Do you have that on your business cards? Leader, grower, or something? You know? So, we're going to divide it up into four phases. Some of you are familiar with them. The first one is a core phase. The second one is a love of learning phase. The third one is a scholar phase. The fourth one is a depth phase. And again, like I said, I'm going to stop one phase short. The last phase is a mission phase, or sometimes called the Two Towers phase. But we're not going to get to that one because we're focused mostly on the education that's happening in our homes and with our families. Mission, depth, and then mission. The core phase. Now, I'm going to write some things up here that I usually regret. I'm going to write up here some ages. And as I'm just going to give you the forewarning. Ages up here, you know, give or take about 170 years, and you're probably right. Right? And so when I say core phase and I say 0 to 8, the reason I say that, there are some consistencies. There are some general trends. It's like, for example, how old does a child learn to crawl? Well, you could say it's somewhere between, like, you know, 7 and 12 months, somewhere in there. And but how often is that not the case? Well, lots of times, you know. And so the reason I say that is just to warn you that this is just a general trend. And if your kids don't match this, then they're absolutely normal and fine. Probably genius. So don't be too caught up in the ages. But core phase is 0 to 8. Love of learning phase, from 8 to about 12, somewhere in there. Give or take 170 years. Scholar phase, 12 to 16, 18. Depth phase, 16 to 22, somewhere in there. Now I'm going to talk about, my notes out. I want to talk about the method and the curriculum of each of these phases, during each of these phases. Core phase, method. Four-letter words. I just had the thought. I bet there's some dads in the room that want to use four-letter words with their core phasers, but I hope you don't. four-letter words. One, work, play, home. We cheated on this one. Let's. That is the method of core phase education. What does it mean? It means that we work together. If you can call it work when a two-year-old is trying to help you sweep. We play together, and we do it at home. Okay? It's fairly straightforward, fairly simple, right? The curriculum is good, bad, right and wrong, true and false. So what are you trying to accomplish? What are you trying to teach them during that phase? You want, by the time that they're 8 years old, that they have a solid core. And for an LDS group, that age really means something, right? You have a solid core of what's good and bad. Now, of course, they don't know everything perfectly. We're still learning about good and bad, true and false. But basically, they have a pretty good core of, I know what's right, I know what's wrong, I know it's bad to hit, it's good to hug your mom. You know, the basic things that we understand, those basic truths. So what does this look like? You know, here's the funny part about this. When we get to about 5 years old, we want our 6-year-olds especially to sit in their seats and do their work. And when we get to our 16-year-olds, we say, go play all that you want. This dad's like, no, I don't. Trust me, I don't say that to my 16-year-olds. But right, there's a tendency to treat our teenagers and say, this is the best time of your life, here are the keys, here's this money, go play, go have fun. And we kind of flip-flop it. The core phase is the time in our lives where we get to play. We get to learn through play. Now, how many of you have someone in that's in core phase? How do you know you have someone in core phase? How do you know they're in core phase? Good, because they're somewhat obedient, right? They're willing. Yep. They run around a lot. They're still learning about what's good and bad, what's right and wrong. They're still learning some of those basic lessons. And that they're not necessarily into that next phase of level of learning, which we'll understand a little bit better. But right, it doesn't mean that if you have a five-year-old that they're necessarily in that phase, but we can get a general idea. So here's what it looked like. I had one mom said this: how do I teach through work, through play, these basic core ideas or core principles with my five-year-old? She said, it goes something like this. She said, I have my five-year-old who toddles around with me, sometimes near me, sometimes not. But when we're together, when we're doing the let's part, where we're out working together or playing together, whenever I see something good, true or right, I mention it. I tell him about it. Whenever I see something bad, false, or wrong, then I tell him about that. So it might go something like this. Johnny, can I talk to you for a minute? I noticed you just hit your sister. Is that good? No. Is that right? Yeah. Yes. Well, you know, I used to have this little speech. I taught 5 and 6-year-olds at a day camp. I used to have my little speech that went, now, did you hit Johnny? Yeah, I hit Johnny. Is that a good thing to do, hit people? Well, you know, some they weren't sure, right? They're still learning. Would you like it if Johnny hit you? Well, probably not. Well, then, and so the funny little tangent story, but I had a little 4-year-old girl, 5-year-old girl ran up and said, oh, you know, Mr. Rouse, Travis kissed me. And so I said, all right, Travis, come over here. And I said, Travis, you know, I started my little speech and you can see where it's going. Did you kiss her? Yes, I did. And now, would you like it if, never mind, you know, go play. No. So it didn't quite work in everything, but you get the idea. We have these little speeches, and that's how they did that phase. Another parent described it this way. One of the things we do a lot in the core phase is we read a lot together, and that's a form of play for us. Is we just read books, and they really love it, and we read together. And whenever I see something in the book that's right or good or true, I mention it. Whenever I see something that's wrong or bad or false, I mention that as well. Now, some of you are thinking, but my five-year-old wants to do math. Notice that math isn't up here. Math is not a part of this core phase. Literature and reading aren't a part of this core phase either, unless they are play. Unless they're play. Once your students say, I want to do this for real, I want to really study literature and I want to really study math, then that means they're shifting into level learning phase, and that's great. Right? It could be a 5-year-old, it could be an 8-year-old, it could be a 12-year-old. Who knows? But so your curriculum, the goal that you're trying to teach is you're trying to give them those basic cores. Now, what happens when your 4-year-old says, I want to read? Well, does that work to them? Is that academics to them? Nope, play. What about when they want to do math? Play. What about when they want to whatever? And you let them play. Now, again, I'm feeling conveyor belt. You know how I'm feeling conveyor belt? Some of you are thinking, but 6-year-olds have to learn to do math. They're 6 years old. I mean, when you go down the conveyor belt, you have 5 and then 6, and 6 is math and basic reading, and you have to teach that. It's 6. That's when you do it, right? Well, that's the conveyor belt's idea of when that takes place. For your children, it may be different. Maybe your son doesn't learn to read until he's 9. Boy, that really rubs our conveyor belt wrong, doesn't it? Does that mean he's dumb? Does that mean he's slow? It means he's different, that's for sure. If my son learned to walk at about 13 months, 12 months, right in there, learned to walk. Now, if my nephew learned to walk when he was 16 months old, obviously my son's smarter than his son. Right? No. And in that same way, we have to turn off the conveyor belt just a little bit. Now, this is really hard because I'm trying to like push you one way but not have you go too far. Okay? So the core is, during this core phase, we're playing together, we're working together, and we're just basically teaching the basic principles. By the way, how important is this? Don't skip it. Don't get straight to reading. And just do reading and say, we're doing reading assignments right now. Don't skip this phase. Don't skip and just teach them math. Teach them what's good and what's true and what's right. In fact, I kind of joke, if you don't give them this phase, if you don't give them this curriculum, if they don't learn this, please, please don't educate them. Please don't educate your children unless they have a good core. Because evil, stupid people are a lot better than evil, smart people. Okay? So please, please don't educate your children until they have this core phase, okay? It doesn't mean that we don't do education throughout this. It doesn't mean we don't read and play together. I know Oliver DeMille gives the example when he came home from work one day and he said, all right, kids, I'm going to take everyone to ice cream who can answer three questions. Question number one, what is your name? Right? Question number two, what color was the sky today? And he's got almost all core phasers. Question number three, what's the square root of 25? Oh, no, I don't know. And he runs around, everyone's trying to find out the square root of 25, and it's fun, it's play. But he's not seriously expecting that that's the curriculum. That's not seriously his goal. I mean it's along the path. So again, I don't mean to push you too far that way, but just understand that it is okay to say, I'm just going to teach them good, bad, true, false, right, wrong. Okay, let's move on. I'm not going to have enough time if I don't hurry. All right, next phase, method and curriculum. Love of learning, the method is to love learning. The curriculum is whatever you love. I know that's simple, but it's true. This is the phase where we begin to really become students and really to become learners, right? When we begin to be curious and fascinated about something enough that we want to sit down and study and learn about it. Now, I have a 16-month-old boy, and does he want to sit down and learn about things? Sort of, but it's not an academic study. It's just kind of like toy. It's playing. But pretty soon you'll get the student that says, I want to learn about butterflies. And I want to sit down and study butterflies. And I want to learn all about butterflies. Right? And so we begin to get in this phase where we begin to learn. Now, the curriculum is, so the method is, let's inspire them to love to learn. What do they learn? Whatever they love. Yeah.
I think in the core, also, things are, a 16-year-old loves to learn everything. Everything goes in their mouth. Everything's on their face. Everything's
yeah, it's true. That is really true. Loving to learn in an academic way.
Because they move beyond. They've learned everything they can, really, with their hands.
I love that.
They're moving into it.
That is really insightful. In fact, you watch a newborn, even, that's going, and they're looking and they're learning. I mean, let me just pause, because that was such a good comment. Do you see? Isn't it a natural flow? We're naturally going to be learners. In fact, the only thing that could possibly get in our way of learning is someone trying to teach us something. That's the most dangerous thing you can do to learning, is to get in and say, I tried to teach my son to crawl. And we would do crawling lessons, and I'd be like, all right, ready, right, ready, left, And did it work? No, it didn't work at all. But we had fun together, I think. I did. I don't know about you. He seemed to be happy. Yeah. Yeah.
They essentially want to make the home school a reflection of what they wish public schools were. Mm-hmm. Level of learning, they have to pass tests.
Yeah.
They have to do certain curriculum. As parents, it's just shut down your throat. So leaving the state is certainly on the list of options for us. But right now,
that's a good question. And I'm going to come and ask me after. Just because I'm really stuck with time and I want to get through this material. So come ask me after. During this phase, the key thing that you're going to be doing is a key word we'll talk about later, is inspiring. This is the phase where they get to choose what they study, but you get to choose what you inspire them to study. Okay? So they get to choose what they study, whatever they love, whatever they're interested in. But you, it's kind of like that old saying, the husband may be the head, but the mother is the neck and turns the head, right? It's sort of the same way with their students. They are the head. They get to choose. They get to decide what they do for that block of time. And but the mother, the family, the father is the one that gets to inspire them and direct them towards the things that they really want. So I have mothers that say, well, my 8-year-old doesn't want to study math. And I say, do you want your 8-year-old to study math? And they say, yes, I want my 8-year-old to study math. And I say, do they love math? And they say, no, they hate math. And I say, do you love math? We'll get to that later. And they say, no, I don't love math. And I say, the best way you can get your 8-year-old to really love math and actually learn math, because all education is self-education, is to, first of all, fall in love with math yourself and then inspire them to love math too. Is that very hard? How many 8-year-olds just fall in love with whatever their parents happen to be doing at the time? If you're sitting on the book, especially fathers, by the way, you're sitting on the couch reading a book, and all of a sudden, how many 8-year-olds do you have sitting right next to you? You know, all of them, and a few 10-year-olds, because they don't want to be beaten out with time with dad. But whatever. You have this great experience where you're learning, and this is the time where you're going to be spending a lot of time inspiring. Next phase. This is the part that makes everyone feel better, because it sounds more conveyor belt. Scholar phase, 8 to 10 hours a day, 5 to 6 days a week, for, let's say 8 to 10 months a year of study. The total is a little bit beyond 5,000 hours of study for those years. Oh, so let's say, 4 to 5 years. That's the scholar phase. 8 to 10 hours a day, 5 to 6 days a week, 8 to 10 months a year, 4 to 5 years. That's the scholar phase. That's the phase where our students who have fallen in love with learning, totally inspired, shift, transition, because they understand that they're beginning to grow up and want to be adults. And they realize that learning is going to take on a much deeper role in their lives. And they spend this amount of time. Now, I know that for those of us who grew up on the conveyor belt, that seems absolutely ludicrous. It seems absolutely impossible that a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old would want to do that. By the way, girls usually transition before boys, at least the tendency is. It's study, meaning whatever learning is taking place. You're learning for about that amount of time. Maybe it's a science experiment along the way, but you're learning for that much time. Now, I hate to even say this, but if you ever feel like you're in love with learning and your kids are falling behind, just wait until they get to scholar phase. For example, I know one kid who, 14 years old, finally says, I just haven't really done math yet. I know that's going to be something I'm going to need down the road. I think I'm going to do scholar or Saxon math. He went through Saxon math books, the first 3 books in about 3 months, and had a pretty good understanding of it. And right? I mean, he just buckled down, did it for, 4 or 5 hours a day and just went through it and learned math. And so this is the phase where those type of things takes place. What does it look like? By the way, what's the curriculum? The curriculum is self-directed and then mentored. So we go through a couple of different phases. The first phase is a self-directed phase, and then there becomes a mentored phase as they progress and move up into it a little bit. Once the self-directed kind of wears off, and they really want to take direction with it.
But they choose their mentor.
They do choose their mentor, yeah. So it's very much self-owned, but usually, though, a lot of 15, 16-year-olds are saying, I just need a mentor. I need somebody who really can push me and give me more direction in my study. Some don't necessarily get to that until depth, where they really get to the mentored phase, but yeah. So what does it look like? It looks like a 14-year-old saying, Dad, please don't bother me. Wood chores. I got to study this morning. Mom, I'm going to be in my room. Could you just slide lunch under the door? I'm going to be reading. And they read and they study and they study. Why? Because they love it. Because they love it. And they realize that there's great joy to be had in learning and studying and knowing. Last phase, depth phase. Depth phase in many ways is, I'm not going to explain it because this is more of a college phase. But it's definitely mentored, and it becomes more specific in the direction of the study, and so it becomes more specific, and it's again an additional huge number of hours in study. All right, I went through that fast. Questions? Good. Now, why does it matter that he's 16? It feels like it does, though, huh?
It just, when I see that 12 to 16, 8 to 10 hours a day,
yeah.
My head wants to explode because I'm thinking there's no way
Which phase is he in? 16-year-old?
It's a girl, and she'll be 16 in September.
Which phase is she in? The 16-year-old girl.
She really is what I want. She's eager about learning.
Cool. Were you doing conveyor belt? Meaning textbooks?
Yes.
Okay. Well, so if you have a 16-year-old love of learning, what should you do? Inspire them like crazy to love learning. Yeah, you say, hey, let's. What would you love to learn today? Man, I'd just really love to study. I don't know, what's one for her?
She loves history.
I would love to just study history today. Do you know what? Let's do it. Let's not even do math or literature or grammar. Let's just study history. By the way, that's not a bad start. I was thinking like Legos, you know. That's a good one, right? And you can go, all right, let's just study. You know, I know a 15-year-old young man, ask him that question, he would have said football. What does dad do? He goes, by the way, dad's a high school drama teacher. So, I mean, as far from football as you can get. And he goes, all right, son, let's go to the library and let's find all of the books you can find, Vince Lombardi and all the great football coaches and some of the great teams of history, and let's study football. And dad sat down with him and he read Vince Lombardi, and he inspired that kid to love football and to love learning about football and love studying great coaching. And man, he got him going. And guess what? About 2 years later, I guess he wasn't 15, he was 15 when I met him, he comes up to me and he says, Dan, by the way, he's 5'8", 120 pounds, maybe, soaking wet. He goes, I don't think I'm going to be a football player. I'm wondering, but I do know I have great things to accomplish, and I'm wondering if you wouldn't mind helping me mentor. I said, only if you'll give me 6 hours a day minimum of study. He said, okay, never missed a day. And then I said, the next year, I said, when he turned 16, going on 17, I said, I won't do it unless I have at least 8 to 10 hours a day of committed study. Does 8 to 10 hours of committed study. In leadership. Yeah, so we did Uncle Tom's Cabin, we did the Federalist Papers, we did Stephen Covey, we did the Bridget and Dow, we did, we went through tons of material. Geography, mathematics, history, economics, we did all of those in brief. We kind of did a lot of different things. Yeah. Sure. Well, I probably wouldn't know either until I was Stephen Covey as a father. And then I could understand that a little bit better. I'm going to move on. I know there are going to be more questions. Maybe we can stick around and answer, do a Q&A, little Q&A session right at the end. Let's talk about the seven keys. The seven keys are going to fit into these and give them more substance and structure. The seven keys are principles of education. They're not necessarily a methodology. They're not necessarily they're core principles to great teaching. And I think that consistently across the board, where you find these, great leadership education will take place. Where you don't find these, leadership education won't be as effective. Key number one, or principle number one, is mentors. Mentors, not professors. The great leadership education takes place when you have a mentor, a small group of students, or one-on-one, helping them to unveil their genius, helping them to discover and go through the process of becoming a great person, great individual. It doesn't happen when you have someone who stands up in the front of the room, says, shut up, sit down, I'm going to tell you, download information, and as well as you can resuscitate or recite that information back to me, the better you'll do in your classes, and the higher I'll rank you. That's not how you get great education. Great education happens when you have one-on-one basis and you're trying to develop and help them grow into genius. Again, mentoring, you're going to find mentoring emphasized especially here, where you're sitting down on a one-on-one basis saying, what are your goals? What are you trying to accomplish? Which are great questions for a 14-year-old, by the way. And I talked to your 14-year-olds this morning about it. I said, let's talk goals. Let's talk big dreams. Let's figure out what we want. Because once you understand, once they begin to see big goals, big dreams, then you can start to say, all right, let's now build a foundation under that dream, and let's get specific in what you need to study. Now, if you want to be you want to design, there's some really fun dreams this morning when we were talking about it with the kids, but if you want to design new jet weapons, or I don't know, there are some fun ones that the young boys did, then all right, that's a great dream. Let's mentor you. Let's give you the education that you'll need to actually do that. And that's what mentoring takes place. If you want to be, or some other ones, you want to be a director and you want to direct films, let's give you the education that prepares you for that mission. Does that make sense? So mentoring is that process of individually giving powerful help and directed help for individuals to accomplish goals, missions, and follow that direction. So key number one is mentors, not professors. Number two, let's see, classics, not textbooks. Classics, not textbooks. Again, great leadership education takes place. It's so fun to watch our graduates walk the stage, because what does it look like when you've had a mentor, 4 years of mentored classical education? What happens when you've had a student who studied for 4 years at home classically, and then they get under a real mentor, someone who can really push them and give them greater depth and really focus and give them the understanding they need. And they've spent 4 years at about 40 hours a week spending time with Jefferson and Washington, Madison, Plutarch, Aquinas. Can you imagine what that looks like when someone has spent that much time with those great men and women? It's pretty tremendous. It's pretty cool. I mean, they'll all admit they know very little. They don't know very much. They all admit it. They're not the high and mighty look down their nose and quote Plato at you type of kids. They understand there's a long way to go, but there's a wisdom beyond their years because they've spent time with the great men and women. We have an old saying that if you want to become great, the best way to do it is to come consistently face to face with greatness. And that's what classics do for you. Number three, quality, not conformity. By the way, I'm going to write these up here as we go. Classics, you do them in a different color. Classics, you'll find throughout all the phases. That's going to be consistent. Are there some core classics? Oh, yeah, there's some great ones. In fact, if we wanted to, we could make a list. Are there some level learning classics? Absolutely. Little House in the Prairie. Are there some scholar classics? Definitely, right? And so classics are going to be done throughout. Mentored, real mentored studies may bleed into level learning, but really it's going to be through the scholar and into the depth phase is when you're really going to get into the mentoring part of that, the mentored phase of learning. I mean, you're still going to do individual inspiring, but when you actually sit down and have a mentor session with your child and really say, all right, where are you going? What do we want to accomplish? And how do we get you there? That's going to take place in that last phase. And then this next one, quality, not conformity, also is going to be in this, especially in this scholar phase. What does it mean? Quality, not conformity, is the learning style or method of a good high school football coach. And it goes something like this. Now, did any of you play sports in high school, participate in that arena? What sports did we play?
Wrestling.
You wrestled? Ooh, wrestling's a really good one. Any others? Softball. In wrestling, I don't know wrestling as well, so I won't use wrestling. Let's use softball. We were the basketball kids next to the wrestlers, and we were just scared of them. But, well, let's use softball. In softball, if the pitcher throws a bad pitch and throws five bad pitches in a row, the coach just says, well, good enough. Well, that's a C-level performance, and that's just fine with me. Do they say that?
No.
No, they say, do it again. Do it again, do it again, do it again, until they get it right. In fact, let's shift your arm and the way your follow-through, your release point is wrong, and they coach them through that process until it's what? It's quality. It's not a matter of conforming and following checklists or doing what everyone else does. It's a matter of quality performance. When you get to that scholar phase, this is the part that dads love, because before it's all this, you get to do what you want. And then it's like, all right, get over here. Let me show you some quality, you know. Look at that sloppy handwriting. Get to work. Do it again, you know. And the concept is that we are going to make them work and work until they give a quality performance. So if the assignment during that mentored phase is to write an essay, you work on the essay and work on the essay until it's quality. At George Smith College, we only have two grades. A, meaning acceptable, and DA, meaning do it again. Yeah, in core phase, it doesn't work as well. I mean, if we had more time, we could talk about how that principle applies there as well, because I think those principles do follow through. It would be different. But for now, I'm gonna say probably not in core phase, because when they come and they show you the flower, you don't go, lousy flower, do it again. No, that's not, you know, if they hand you the paper, you don't know what it is, and you say, this doesn't look anything like anything, go back, do it again. No, with eight-year-olds, that's not the emphasis, but definitely once you get to that phase where they really want the feedback, you're going to keep having them work through that until they get it right, and not just to conform within a particular assignment or particular checklist that is required, right? And especially as they get in that scholar phase and they're looking for mentorship. By the way, some of your older love of learners might really benefit from this principle. In other words, they might really benefit from you saying, you know, I think you can do better work than that. Let me see it. And let me show you a couple things you can do to really improve that piece so it's really excellent work. Because you're worthy, you're smart enough to do excellent work, and I want to make sure you're doing it. Right? Question, comment. Yeah. Well, and that's let's skip straight to number four. and number four is this concept: inspire, not require. This is why I would hesitate with that comment a little bit. Inspire, not require. Inspire, not require is another one that I believe is fairly easy to see in all of the different phases. It's something you're going to be consistently using throughout all the phases. And this is probably the one that's most frustrating, because it's the hardest to get kind of a good finger on if you haven't had the great education and you haven't been brought up this way and you haven't done that. The not require part's easy, right? It just means that we allow them to choose what they study, what they learn, and how long they learn. We let them choose those things. The inspire part is the difficult one. Again, if all education is self-education, and it's the teacher's job not to teach but to inspire, then it becomes really interesting. So what do we mean? We mean that when you're with your children, you're not going to ever require them to learn anything. And I sort of mean that. Maybe the one require will be not to run into the road. But very few things will we require of them. Why? Again, I'm speaking educationally. I'm not speaking about chores and other parts of your lives. There might be some more requires. But educationally, why is that? Why would that work? Why does that make sense?
Well, a couple of reasons that I can think of. One is everybody's different. And if you're requiring this child to go this pathway, it may not be their pathway.
Huh.
So they won't get it.
Yeah.
They don't want to have anything to do with it. And so they will rebel against you. And maybe not that first time, and maybe not the 10th time, but eventually you have this rebellious kid and don't know why.
Yeah, that's really true. Yeah. How many of us like to be required? Anybody? 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 No. Here's the thing. So often what happens then when parents say, all right, I'm going to do TJ Ed. I'm ready. Bring on TJ Ed. It looks something like this. Day one, they go home and they go, all right, kids, no more requirements. Now, their kids have had requirements before, and therefore they go, this is like anarchy, man. This is the best thing that's ever happened. You mean I don't have to do math? Really, don't have to do math. You're like, Mom, go back to that conference every year. I love that conference, right? And so they go into that system. The next thing that happens, the next step, is that they then let them do anything, and they don't do anything. And then step number three, they go, obviously this isn't working. Obviously my kids, and dad especially, is saying, boy, anarchy. I'm not in favor of that. And so they go back to what they were doing. Here's how you do TJ Ed. You've got to get creative, and you've got to start thinking. So if you want to inspire them to do math, you've got to, first of all, fall in love with math, and second of all, you've got to figure out a way that they love it. They fall in love with it. TJ Ed is really, really hard because it requires well-educated people to be inspiring. And I'll tell you what, it's way easier to require than to inspire. It's a lot easier. And so don't forget the inspire part. Number four. Am I on number four or number five? Number five. Structured time, not content. Structured time, not content. Again, I've alluded to this. So in this phase, we're going to say, all right, we're going to study for 4 hours. But what are we going to study, Mom? You know, I have a few things that I'm pretty much in love with, but you study whatever you want. And so we're not structuring the content during the time, but we are saying, this is 4 hours of study time. Can I play TV? Play TV? No, you can't play TV. You can't watch TV. Can I play video games? No, I can't watch video games. You can't play video. This is study time. You have to be learning time. Unless you want to be in core phase, and then we can go outside and work together. Or we can go play together. We can do something that's core phase. In fact, in some homes I've heard that it's an insult to call a 12-year-old a core phaser. They're like, I'm not core phase, Mom, and they go back to studying, right? So you're structuring this time, not necessarily content. Next principle. Simplicity, not complexity. Simplicity, not complexity. Number six. Learning. I loved that. Is it Marie? Is that your name? I love that Marie's comment where she said that if you look at the 2-year-old or the 1-year-old, they are learning all of the time. Learning is a very simple process. It really is as simple as a book and a tree. It really is as simple as a kid outside with a magnifying glass, an encyclopedia, and a bunch of bugs. It really is that simple. And so often we want to make it so complex and so intricate. So what do you do with all your complex curriculums? Do you own a fireplace? I'm kidding. No, you put them on the shelf and you use them as reference material, whatever. But those complex curriculums really might be too much. They really do. It really is as simple as a book and a mentor and a tree. Yeah.
But the book on the shelf. I mean, I have a kid who got an encyclopedia from the knowledge book, and he carried that with him everywhere for
Yep. half a year. And what's happening? Great education. Excellent education is taking place, and he's just carrying an encyclopedia around. It really is that simple.
Sitting on the shelf, though, may, at some point, that child may say, I want
to. Last one, because I'm running out of time. Like I said, this is like, I feel like I'm bulldozing through it. Let's talk at my booth. Let's talk later to really get these principles better. We have the books for sale, both the Thomas Jefferson Education and Home Companion at our booth. And they're doing other TJ Ed things throughout the weekend. You can ask questions. And I know they're doing something tonight. So don't feel like we went through this too fast and you don't have your questions answered. Go find out. Go learn. Last one. This is the one I want to emphasize and end on. You, not them. You, not them. I have a tiny bit of education. And I've hung out with some really well-educated people. And it really is this simple. I know this is going to sound just almost sophomoric, but it really is this simple. When you are well-educated, the odds of your children being well-educated are very, very high. In order for your children to have a world-class education, you have to have a world-class education. There's no way around it. It's the reason that I play the guitar and not the piano. Because my dad played the guitar, and no one played the piano, and I loved it when my dad would sing Puff the Magic Dragon around the campfire, and I play the guitar and not the piano. It's the reason why I love the beach and not the mountains. It's because my mom loved the beach, and she would throw the beach ball into the waves and watch it come back, and she'd just giggle. She still does. The reason I believe in my heart religiously what I do is because my parents believed in their hearts religiously. Does that make sense? So often, and I know that as parents grow older, you begin to learn this more and more, the apple does not fall very far from the tree. So secret, be a really great tree. Right? I'll close with a prediction. In 5 years, your children will either be on the path to a world-class education, or they won't. Here's the prophecy. Here's the prediction. Whether or not they are will depend completely on how much you and how far down you've gone on the path to a world-class education. It will be almost a direct corollary. In the families where I've seen this work really, really well, usually mom or dad or both are in degree programs, or they're studying, or they spend a lot of time reading, or mom is in a classic all the time. At the dinner table, they can't get over discussing Bastiat's, what is seen and what is not seen. They play instruments. Mom goes and learns the piano. I mean, basically, they get a great education. And as a result, the whole family is infused with a spirit of brilliance, of genius, of education. That's how you do it. It's really that simple. Now, these other principles and these other concepts are really important, and they become very almost innate as you get the great education. Meaning, 5 years from now, you'll be like, well, duh, of course that's how you get a great education. And it happens by you going and doing it. I don't see anyone stopping me, so I'm going to tell one last story. I was at a camp, and we were camping up in the mountains, myself and a few other families. It wasn't real camping. We had cabins and things, so I don't know if you call that camping, but we were up in the mountains. And sure enough, I hear this little three-year-old violin. Have you heard a three-year-old violin before? It's that violin that goes, you know, it's that one. And I heard this three-year-old violin, or four, I don't know what age, but, you know, it's a little violin student, a beginning violin player. And I turned to my buddy who was there with me, and I said, you know, isn't that fun? I love little kids playing instruments. I think that's fantastic. And he turned to me, and he goes, you know the funny part? It's not a little kid. I'm like, whoa, it sounds like one. Well, mom wanted a four-year-old to be in lessons. Four-year-old got started with the giddiness of a four-year-old and stopped about as quickly. Well, mom had already paid for the lessons. And so, she started. And there she was, practicing her daily violin at the campsite where we were camping. Question. What are the odds that 4-year-old will play the violin? What are the odds? Now, what are the odds that a world-class, humble, trying, failing, wonderful person is going to have wonderful, talented, educated, brilliant children? I'll tell you that they're pretty good. They're pretty good. Core message: for your children to gain a great leadership education, it will require you to be pioneers in becoming great leaders yourself. So go do it, get started, and get started soon, because they deserve it, and so do you. Thank you.
LDS Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.